HD Smartcast.
You're listening to a Hindustan Times production brought to you by HD Smartcast.
On the record, we have Dr. Tom Frieden, who is a public health expert based in New York. He also used to be the former director of the CDC during the Obama administration. And he has been taking and tweeting quite a lot about the situation, the COVID-19 pandemic, the second wave, and also about India. Dr. Frieden, thank you so much for speaking with Hindustan Times. I wanted to start by asking you, I do believe you have an India connection and you have spent time here in India. So before we get started, I just wanted to ask you about that connection.
Sure. I lived in India from 1996 to 2002. I had the honor of working with the World Health Organization and the World Bank and assisting the national government and state governments of India to implement an improved tuberculosis control program. This was, I have to say, an absolute highlight of my career, despite having gone on to become Health Commissioner of New York City and Director of the US CDC. And currently, I run a global organization committed to public health called Resolve to Save Lives.
Thank you for that, Dr. Frieden. As you know, obviously, you know India's situation quite well. I want to start off by asking you, what do you make of the situation right now here in the country? I think you have been following the updates quite closely.
Well, I think the whole world is watching India and sympathizing with the great difficulty it is going through now. What we have learned is that this virus is a very challenging enemy, and it is the only enemy. You know, it is humanity against the virus. And what we must do is have a common cause to save lives and defeat the virus.
You know, were you tracking it all throughout? You know, a lot of people are talking about the fact, Dr. Frieden, that they didn't see this second wave coming, and a lot of authorities, because people are very upset over here. I know you've been following, but just for our listeners as well, at the moment, we're seeing 350,000 or more cases, new cases every day, and almost 4,000 deaths. It actually surpassed 4,000 daily deaths a few days ago. But that's the kind of havoc that we're seeing the second wave claiming. Now, authorities in India have said that they were taken by surprise, that no one could have actually predicted this. What is your take on that?
Well, I think this is a new virus, and there's a lot we do not know. Still, there's a lot that we do not know. And so I think the best thing that we can all do is focus on the future. What can we do as a world to have a better control, to save lives, and to keep our economy and our educational system going?
And what would that be, according to you, if you're talking about the future at a time like this,
yeah,
where we have an oxygen
sure
shortage?
Well, first off, the thing to understand, and this is true everywhere in the world, where you have uncontrolled spread, you have to reduce spread. And you do that by universal indoor masking, exposures that can result in explosive spread. Indoor exposures, amount of travel. These are the things that are driving the huge spread in countries around the world. But we've learned a lot. There are ways to close and be safer, but also keep the economy moving. We understand now that that outdoors is generally safe, so if people are packed together very closely for a long time, that's more of a problem. But the first thing that really is important, because even if there were enough vaccine, it takes a long time to get out, and it takes weeks or months to develop the immunity. So the vaccine itself is not going to result in a rapid control. So that's the first point of closure. The second thing point to make is organization. What we call, and I'm not making any comment about India, I'm just giving you general comments about COVID. My organization works with more than 40 countries on COVID. And so we are able to kind of see what the best practices are. But what's very important is there's an organized response, what's sometimes called an incident management system. This is needed at national, subnational, and local levels as a crucial component of epidemic response, so that there is a clear organization that is kind of a war room or management center. And then that's the second issue. The third is to reduce gaps. It's very important to provide both clinical care and strategic vaccination. So clinical care means organizing rapid provision of oxygen, dexamethasone, good clinical care. But also, for strategic vaccination, you look at who is dying from COVID. About two-thirds of the deaths are in people over the age of 65. I'm sorry, over 60. So you really want to make sure that you get the over 60s vaccinated as quickly as possible, understanding that this will still take many weeks or months before it has impact. But vaccinating the elderly on priority is very important, because the sad fact is there is not enough vaccine in the world. And we think my organization thinks there should be more sharing of vaccines. We think there should be not just opening intellectual property, but also hands-on technology transfer to get all of the effective vaccines, including the mRNA vaccines, scaled up. But because there aren't enough vaccines in the short term, we really must focus on vaccinating two groups, healthcare workers and older people. Healthcare workers, because not only is that the fair thing, but because if people don't trust the healthcare system, you're going to see many deaths, not just from COVID, but from many other conditions as well, from measles, from rotavirus and other vaccine preventable diseases. You'll see locally, we've seen a real setback in tuberculosis control as fewer patients are coming forward to be diagnosed. So the final point I would make, in addition to closures / masks, is the first point. The second point is the incident management system or war room. Third point is clinical care. Fourth point is strategic vaccination. And the fifth point I would make is communication. Means providing clear information on what's known, when it's known, establishing data dashboards, establishing a risk alert system so people know what their risk is. At Resolve, my organization, we've done this for the U.S., working with the newspaper, the New York Times. So you can see for every community you're in, what your risk level is. The equivalent of how hard is it raining COVID in my community. But all that being said, I go back to my first point, which is that the whole world looks at what is happening now in India with sympathy and with a focus on doing whatever we can as a world to support India in this very important challenge.
So Dr. Frieden, pardon me because the audio is a little yay, so you know I'm trying my best to understand. So one of the things I wanted to, you talk about vaccines and you know how important it is that it gets to the right group, and especially elderly you're talking about. So would you disagree with the way we have, you know, the policy of vaccine dispersal here in India? Initially, it was just for the first 2 months, it was just for those above 60, and then it became, and the comorbid, and then it was opened up to 45 plus, and now, since the beginning of May, it's for everyone. But we have a vaccine shortage. because we only have two vaccines, the AstraZeneca and the indigenously produced Covaxin. Because there's a vaccine shortage and we didn't ask for order other vaccines before that, do you think it was wrong to open up all age groups for vaccination?
You know, I'm not in India, so I'm not seeing the realities there, and so I wouldn't like to comment on what's happening there. What I can say is that, of course, in India, health is a state affair, but the center has a crucially important role to play, and I know that really Chilean efforts are being made to scale up vaccine production. I think in the interim, there are a series of things that need to be done to try to save lives and also reduce the burden of COVID on health and society more generally. But I will say that the models suggest that the better targeted vaccines are, the more lives they will save. Yeah, I will say also there is some controversy about that, because, for example, in the U.S., much of the spread is happening from younger people. And so, in theory, if you were to vaccinate the younger people, you could reduce spread and therefore have more of an impact. But I think, ultimately, what we've learned about these vaccines and what we've learned about the virus is that the virus is very difficult to deal with. So it's going to be around for a while. And I come back to the fundamental point that our most important priority is to reduce risk of death.
Okay. I also wanted to ask you that there's a lot of, obviously because of the panic, but the high number of deaths that are happening. And this is also because of the fact that, you know, we had a relatively mild first wave. So everyone's kind of very upset with the number of deaths that have taken place in the second wave. So there are a lot of apprehensions about breakthrough infection. ICMR has recorded it, our medical research body has recorded it at 4.5% of people being infected after being vaccinated. I read in your interview that you said that there have been, you know, you don't know of anyone dying after being vaccinated. However, there are instances here, while officially there are no such records, but here in India, people have anecdotal evidence of doctors who are fully vaccinated dying after being infected. What would you say to people who are afraid because of this?
Yes, so that quotation was from some time back. And since then, the U.S. CDC has reported on more than 100 deaths among people who have been vaccinated and appear to have gotten COVID. Not all of them may have died from COVID, but some of them certainly did. So, you know, there's an old saying in the U.S., the only things certain in life are death and taxes. A vaccine is not 100%. And there are breakthrough infections. Most of them are mild, but not all of them are mild. And so we can't assume complete protection from a vaccination, even if it's a complete series, even if it's the mRNA vaccines, which appear to be even more effective than the others. And that's why it's very important that we think of this as a multi-layered approach to increase protection. There's not one thing. In fact, your vaccination will be more effective, in effect, if other people around you are also vaccinated. Because you will be safer if the case rate is lower. This is why we have emphasized the issue of risk alert levels, kind of usually a four-level system, maybe a five-level system, kind of from extremely high, very high, high, moderate, low. To understand that if you're vaccinated and you have an underlying condition, or you're 80 or 90 years old, and you're in a community that has a very high level of spread, you're still going to have to be careful compared to if you're a community with a low level of spread. So I think we really have to understand the context and avoid simple answers here. But fundamentally, the vaccine is not 100%, but it's highly effective. But we need to understand that vaccination works best in the context of a comprehensive program. I'll give you an example. In Israel, they have one of the highest vaccination rates in the world. And yet, because children are not vaccinated, still there's a mandate for children in schools to wear masks. And they have not had outbreaks in schools. So there are many different components of making sure that we save lives. And vaccines are the most powerful, but they're not yet as widely available as we wish they were.
What about the fact that, you know, we have variants emerging all the time? There's an Indian variant now. Before, the concern was the UK variant. There are people who fear that the Indian variant could be much more much deadlier than the previous ones. Are the vaccines which are already there, are they protecting us from those variants?
There's still more information to come on this. Some of the variants appear to be able to evade immunity from some of the vaccines. But we don't yet know to what extent and which variants and which vaccines. So we're going to have to learn more with time about that. What it does tell us is that this is a really difficult virus to fight. And it's important that we not only vaccinate, but also reduce uncontrolled spread anywhere in the world it occurs. Because anywhere there is uncontrolled spread, there is the risk of emergence of even more dangerous variants.
So Dr. Frieden, AstraZeneca, which is the only other one other than the indigenously produced, indigenously made vaccine, which is Covaxin, the other one that we have is AstraZeneca. The fact that UK is offering an alternative to their under 40 population, does that apply to the rest of the world as well? So in India, would you say that we should also take note of it and not take it if we are under 40?
Well, I would leave that for national governments to recommend and for patients and their doctors to discuss. The fact is that it does appear that they're with the J&J vaccine and likely the AstraZeneca, a very rare but potentially serious adverse effect. Still, the number of people who will be benefited by a vaccine is many times greater than the number of people who will be harmed. Now, I will tell you that for the past at least 3 months, my organization has been advocating to open up the intellectual property and provide hands-on technology transfer to scale up mRNA vaccine production around the world. We think this is a global public good. The mRNA vaccines are quicker to produce. They're more certain to produce. They're less difficult to produce rapidly. They appear to provide a very robust level of immunity, and they have not been associated, as far as we know so far, with a kind of rare adverse event. Having said all of that, we have to deal with the world as it is today, not the world as we wish it would be. And certainly someone living in an area which has the spread of COVID will want to strongly consider getting vaccinated.
With all these shortages of vaccines, do you believe that most people in the world will be vaccinated by 2023, even with India at the moment having less than 4% that have got both doses?
I think, and this is what we've been pushing, and Nadia can send you an op-ed I wrote in early March in Politico. This is why I really believe we need to scale up mRNA manufacturing. I think this is essential in order to better address the pandemic. The mRNA vaccines are our insurance policy against variants, against production delays with the other vaccines, and against the possible need for booster doses. It will take far longer than we wish to scale up mRNA manufacturing, and that's why we need to start today. So this is something that needs to be done by government and private sector working together. And I certainly think India could be a very important producer for itself and for the world.
Do you, knowing, and I know you're a data person, I know that you, you know, one of the ways that you kind of advocate is tackling COVID with the help of statistics. Do you, when do you foresee, you know, places like India, because just to have an idea, because at the moment things seem very, very distant, the hope seems really distant. When do you foresee countries like India being, having a majority of its population vaccinated by? And do you ever foresee a time where, can you tell me a time when, like Israel, people would be told that they don't have to wear masks anymore?
I can't predict the future. I don't know what's going to happen with vaccine production, but I know that there are not going to be enough vaccines as soon as we would wish. And that's why closures and masking are very important in the short and medium term. I think we'll ultimately get into a situation where we have limited COVID. It will still have outbreaks and clusters, but we will be at a new normal. I think actually masks will be part of the new normal in certain circumstances. For example, during influenza season, it's very clear that masks have saved tens of thousands of lives from influenza by crushing the curve of influenza. I think people who are not feeling well, as they do in East Asia, should wear masks because this is protecting people around them. People with underlying health conditions or going into crowded areas, they wish to wear a mask. In indoor areas, they wish to wear a mask because that will protect them from a wide range of pathogens. So I think there is a real value to masks. And if you look at countries like Singapore, regions like Hong Kong, and countries like Korea, the widespread use of masks before COVID has been quite important, limiting COVID and other infections. But I think your broader question is more about closures. Will we be able to have our economy robust and growing again? And I think the answer to that is yes. And the sooner we have an organized response, the sooner we have an approach that uses data to inform decisions and to inform the public, the sooner we'll get to that new normal.
So final question is just that, that there is a lot of fear that, and I think that was there across the world in many countries, that the number of deaths we are seeing, that the real number is much, much more. There is a fear that it's underreported, for example, and that's only been corroborated by the fact that in a particular district, they'll say that the official number of people who died of COVID is so many. And then when reporters go to the crematorium, they find many more, the number far larger than that. So would you tell us how important is it to have the actual numbers, to be transparent about the numbers? How important is that in fighting COVID?
Well, I do think that the transparency about data is extremely important. We've seen lots of controversy about reporting of deaths around the world. We have worked with the World Health Organization to suggest one way of doing this, which is to count what's called excess mortality, understanding that this includes both COVID deaths and non-COVID deaths. Because what we see in many countries is that COVID disrupts the healthcare system, and therefore people die from a wide range of causes. That's why it's so important to protect the and continue healthcare services such as immunization services. But the way to track that is by looking at excess mortality. All deaths, from regardless of cause, by age and sex. And then you can kind of get a sense of where the excess mortality is. And Nadia could also send you some writing we've done on excess mortality. But I think the question is a broader one. In nearly all countries, there are more deaths from COVID than there are deaths reported from COVID. That is true for the United States. That is true for most countries in the world. How much more? That's a question that needs to be looked at in each country individually. But fundamentally, an effective disease response system relies on real-time data to adjust the real-time response. And I'd just like to reiterate one point, which is that India is facing a very difficult situation, and I am not there now. Hindsight is always 2020. So I think what's important is to think forward about what needs to be done to reduce the impact on both lives and livelihoods, and to try to understand that we really are all in this together. It is humanity against the virus. And I'm hopeful that in the coming weeks and months, India will be able to have a much better situation. And having traveled the length and breadth of India, I feel relief for what's happening there now.
Thank you for that. Thank you.
All right. All the best.
This was a Hindustan Times production brought to you by HT Smartcast.
HT Smartcast.